Welcome to St. John's United Church of Christ.
We're a church which opens its arms to the leadership and participation of the LGBT plus community.
All are welcome here.
More than welcome here. This is home. We belong.
Let's pray together. God, keep challenging us to believe. Amen. When I was a child, a very small child, I ate dirt. At least that's what they tell me because I don't remember any of it. I was only one, maybe going on two, and apparently every time my mother took us outside to play in the backyard, I toddled straight for the garden and started to eat the dirt. So she decided she would just keep all of us kids indoors all summer long. That traumatized my oldest brother, because now, 50 years later, at least once a year, at a holiday dinner when we're all sitting around the table, my brother will say, "Remember when Judy ate dirt? We had to stay in the whole summer." It's so embarrassing. Why can't he just get over it? It's one time, and Miriam, I don't eat dirt anymore, so the orchard is safe. But I can never get away from that story. It keeps coming around. Have you ever had anything like that happen to you? One time you did something and somebody in your life reminds everybody again and again. That is exactly what we have in our gospel story today. Poor Thomas. One time he says one thing, and now for centuries people talk about doubting Thomas. Poor Thomas. And we all associate those words, doubting Thomas, with this story, thanks to many of our Bible translators who entitled that paragraph, Doubting Thomas. So the subtitle plants that idea in our minds before we even read the story. Now, the definition of doubt is a feeling of uncertainty, but there's another archaic meaning of that word, and it is to be afraid. So keep that in mind as we go into this story a little bit more deeply and look at the context, because as I did my study on this story, I found two or three inconsistencies, some small discrepancies that didn't really add up, which made me wonder, why did the author of John's Gospel include this story? Now, if we look at the text carefully, we will see that none of the disciples immediately believed Jesus had risen from the dead. None of them did. If you remember last week, Mary saw Jesus and thought he was the gardener. She did not see who he was. And in our story today, all the disciples except Thomas are in a room. The doors are shut in this translation, locked in other translations. And Jesus appears in the room with them. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was in a room anywhere alone with the doors closed and anybody showed up in that room with me, I would be a bit startled. I'd be a little afraid. And I think that's what happened to the disciples, because the first thing Jesus said to them is, peace be with you. Don't freak out. It's okay. It's just me, my translation. And still the disciples don't respond until Jesus now shows them his hands and shows them his side. And then, the text says, then they rejoiced. Then they saw the Lord and rejoiced. It's as if they couldn't see him at first. And I don't think it's because he looked differently. I think it's because in their minds, he was gone. And for him to be there suddenly, it didn't make sense. They couldn't see properly until they began to believe a little. And I think we saw that last week too with Mary Magdalene, who thought he was the gardener until he said her name. Now, Thomas isn't there, but everyone else tells Thomas that Jesus came, that he was with them, that he is alive. And Thomas, he doesn't believe them. And I can't say I blame him, but I did read one commentary that suggested that it wasn't Thomas's doubt that was the problem here. It was the fact that he did not believe his own friends. Now, I think it depends on what kind of friends you have. If you have friends that like to play jokes on you, then, yeah, you probably wouldn't believe them. But the disciples didn't believe immediately either. They didn't see Jesus in the room and say, "Jesus is here." They all were a little bit in shock. And so we have to give Thomas a little bit of grace here to be able to process that this could be happening. Now, he says, "I won't believe until I touch his hands, until I put my finger in the hole, until I put my hand in his side." It's a little graphic. And for that one line, he is always remembered. But if we look back in the Gospel of John, we learn some things about Thomas. He was a devoted follower of Jesus. In chapter 11, Lazarus has died, and Jesus is preparing to go to Bethany. We know that he is going to resurrect Lazarus, but the disciples don't know that yet. And they're all trying to talk Jesus out of going to Bethany. They're saying, "Don't go. It's too close to Jerusalem. Everybody's riled up. They're going to arrest you, and they are going to execute you." But Jesus, of course, has made up his mind. He is going to Bethany. He is going to Lazarus. And Thomas says, "We will go with him and die with him." Now, who remembers that Thomas said that? Nobody. We never remember that Thomas was ready to die with Jesus. We only remember that he doubted, that he wanted to touch Jesus' hands. Now, the disciples did go with Jesus to Bethany, and Lazarus was resurrected. He walked out of the grave, and all the disciples saw that. They've already seen resurrection, and yet they're still struggling, Thomas especially, struggling to understand that Jesus could be alive. And I think it is because they could not believe it. They just struggled to believe it. And once they began to believe that it was possible, then they could see Jesus clearly. Now, there's another little discrepancy in the story, and that is, Jesus says to Thomas, "Come here and touch my hand." But in our text from last week, Mary Magdalene went to Jesus, and the text says that he said to her, "Don't touch me." This is the same chapter of John. So what changed? Why did Jesus say to Mary, "Don't touch me," but to Thomas, "Come on over here, touch my hand"? Now, I looked at some very old commentaries, and they suggested that it was because Mary Magdalene was a woman, and so she was unclean, and so Jesus couldn't have an unclean woman touch him. And if she could just be more like Thomas, you know, if she could be a man, then Jesus would say, "Come on over and touch me." Now, I'm the one that used to eat dirt, so if there's any woman who is unclean, it's this one. But I don't think that's what Jesus was talking about in that text. I think a better translation in our story with Mary Magdalene is that Jesus said, "Do not cling to me." I can imagine her, when she realizes that it's Jesus, throwing her arms around him, and he pulls her off and says, "I have a job for you. You need to go tell the disciples I'm alive. Don't cling to me." But we don't know for sure. What we do know is that the author of John's gospel let both those statements sit in the same chapter. "Don't touch me. Come on over here and touch me." Jesus says two completely different things. Another little inconsistency for us to think about. So I wonder what it is in these stories that the author of this gospel wants us to see. In spite of those different portrayals of Thomas and the differing words of Jesus. And he actually tells us in the very last verse that Sherm read for us this morning. John's gospel says, "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and by believing you will see the new life that Jesus has for you." It's written right there for us to see. These are written so you will believe. The author of the gospel is wanting to change our beliefs. If you're wobbling a little and you're not sure if Jesus rose from the dead, or you're not sure that you should follow Jesus, or you're not even sure about this whole religion thing, these stories are written so that you will believe. He wants to change your mind, and he's not hiding. He puts it right out there. That's why the stories are there. The author of this gospel really knows that stories are powerful. Have you ever seen a Weight Watcher commercial? They always have some beautiful person showing before and after. I look so wonderful. It can be you too. It's those stories that make us think, okay, maybe I can do that. And it makes us begin to believe. This made me think of a story that I read not too long ago. Is anybody familiar with a book called Came to Believe? It's published by 12 Step Groups, and it's a collection of stories of people's real struggles and how they moved from addiction into a new life. Several years ago, I wanted to know what was happening in the AA meetings in the basement of my church. There were a lot of people there, almost every night of the week. And so I visited the open meetings, and I introduced myself and said, I work here, and I'm a student, and I'm just here to learn. And they were wonderful to me. They greeted me and welcomed me and let me stay in those meetings with them. And I was so shocked, because what they had in those meetings was real church, real people, real stories, real faith, real struggle, real community. Their church was more church downstairs than our church was upstairs. It was incredible to me. But one of the gentlemen that I met there gave me a book called Came to Believe and said, you will find that these stories are inspiring. And there was a story in that book about a man I will call Pete, because everything is anonymous in the 12-step groups. So Pete, as a young person, decided, thought he had before him a decision to make. He could live a moral, boring, dry kind of life, or he could live an exciting, adventurous life after he had a few drinks. And he decided he wanted the exciting life. Now, his family of origin was very religious, and they believed in a vengeful, unforgiving kind of God who was waiting to send everybody to hell. And so he walked away from that God straight into the bar. Many years go by. He's still sitting at the bar, reaping the consequences of a life controlled by alcohol. And he's having drinks now because he's dulling the pain of the passing of his father. His dad has died. There was a huge memorial service, and all the community members came and said what an upstanding, incredible person his father was. And Pete was not feeling grief. He was feeling anger and envy. He was furious that everybody thought his dad was such a great guy. And as he sat there nursing his drink, he muttered to himself, my dad had every privilege. Everything was given to him. He had a hand up every time he needed it. No wonder he did such a great job with his life. When good guys like me, we can never catch a break. And as he sat there blaming everybody for his own situation, he heard a voice in his ear, crystal clear. Now, he's in a bar. It's noisy. There's a lot of outside noise. There's people talking. There's music playing. But he hears this voice completely clearly. And the voice says, what accounting of your life are you going to give to God? Now, what was so shocking to Pete about that voice was that it was his grandmother's voice, and she had died 20 years earlier. But she had been known to say things like that, and at that moment, he heard that voice so clearly he could not deny that something strange had happened. Now, he realized that he was the only one to blame for his life. He had made choices that put him where he was, but you would think that he would turn his life around right then. You know, your grandmother's voice in your ear, the shocking clarity of knowing that all your decisions have landed you right here, right now. But he didn't stop drinking. In fact, he drank more, because all he wanted to do was drown out the voice of his grandmother. He didn't want to think about it. He didn't want to hear it. He wasn't ready to face it. And so he drank more and more. After several weeks, he was struggling at his job. He's sitting in his office, could not get his mind to focus. And he saw a man walk by the door, and he hated this man, because that coworker had the nerve to invite Pete to a 12-step meeting a few months earlier. And Pete was very angry about that. He saw the man walk by his office, and he said he has no idea what happened next, but in the next moment, he was in the hallway talking to that man, saying, "Will you take me to a meeting?" And he went. And that day, he stopped drinking. And in those meetings, he found community. He found people that understood him. He found the 12 steps, a purpose, something to work through. And most of all, he found not a vengeful, unforgiving God at all, but a God who loved him, a God who offered second chances and third chances, as many chances as Pete needed, a God who always had hope, who loved, and who welcomed him, even at his lowest. That might be God calling right now. Now, these stories, like Pete's, were all written down by the members of all the AA groups and NA groups and Al-Anon groups, and they were compiled into this little book called Came to Believe. And it's all about how people who could not see any hope came to believe that there was hope. Those stories change people's lives. Stories are so important, and our gospel writer knew that and collected these stories about Jesus. And the AA folks know that, and they collect stories, testimonies about real struggles, real people, real faith. And it's okay if it looks different than our faith, but it's a way for us to see hope when everything seems hopeless. So today I want you to think about your stories. What stories in your life can you share that bring hope? Now, I'm not talking about the stories about Judy eating dirt. I'm not talking about the stories about Thomas not believing until he touches Jesus' hand. I'm talking about the stories when you just can't explain what just happened. Sometimes we call it coincidence. The stories when you hear grandmother's voice in your ear and it stops you in your tracks. The stories when maybe the car doesn't start and that day something else happens in your life and you think, that was just too strange. It can't have happened by mistake. There was a reason for this. Now, I've heard some of your stories in our book study over the last few weeks, and I'm hoping that we can get some of those stories recorded on video so that maybe once a month we can show here a God-sighting story, because we are the ones who have to keep generating hope for this world. No one else is going to do that, friends. It's got to be the people who feel connected to the world, to each other, and to God, who can carry the hope for people. Now let's dive back into Thomas just for one moment, into his story, because there's one more thing that's a little strange about this story. And that is that we never know if Thomas actually touched Jesus or not. The story does not tell us. Now you may all believe that Thomas touched Jesus because there are works of art that show Jesus holding his hand out and Thomas reaching up with his hand to touch him. But that's because the church was the biggest patron of the arts, and they commissioned those works. But that is not what the story says. I think that belief for the disciples and for us is a process, and we won't all arrive at the same place, and that is okay. But once we begin to believe, through the stories or any other vehicle, then we can begin to see the hope that Jesus has for us. If we have no belief, we have no hope. And this world desperately needs hope. We have to believe, then we'll see. It's a little backwards from what we think Thomas is telling us today, that I have to see first and then I'll believe. But I really think the gospel writer is telling us that's not it at all. We have to be open. We have to be curious. We have to believe a little bit. Then we'll begin to see. So think about your stories, your God-citing stories, those coincidences, those unusual moments, and share those. Share those stories with someone. We often forget about them because we think if we tell anybody our stories, they will think that we're crazy. They won't listen to us. But nobody here will think you're crazy, right? We will be like those 12-step communities. We will honor your stories and we'll listen, and all of us will have our faith built up so that we can do the work of Jesus in the world. Amen. Let's go in peace. Our service has ended. Thank you all for being here.